All right, welcome back to another episode of the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast. And we have, I think, maybe the best episode we've had, at least in months, coming up here. Two guests this week. We begin with Brian Scalabrine, my colleague over at Yahoo Sports, former NBA forward, former NBA assistant coach, now a broadcaster with NBC Sports Boston. We go through all the news of this week from Cleveland, what's going on there with the lineup changes. Of course, we look at Oklahoma City, their hot play, and Boston struggling a little bit after their London trip. I dive into that with Scal right at the top of the show. A little bit later on, Seth Davis, my former colleague at Sports Illustrated, now running the Fieldhouse over at The Athletic. It's now, you know, late January, so it's time for a way too early NBA draft preview. So we look at some of the top names that could be in the NBA draft, and we take a quick look back at some of the bigger storylines from the 2017 draft. So stick around for all that. A terrific podcast coming up for you next. Stick around.
This is the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road,
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
Joining me on the podcast, a friend of the program, I have a gift card.
Yes,
it's
yes,
in my pocket somewhere.
What is it for, though?
It's for whoever my sponsor is today.
Okay, I'm going to listen to the podcast and find out.
It is said. Just send like a card, whoever my sponsor is, to NBC Sports Boston with just Scalabrine on it. Just say Scalabrine, yeah. NBC Sports Boston.
It'll get to me.
It'll find its way to you. Brian Scalabrine, former NBA player, NBA analyst, got his own radio show on SiriusXM NBA, and of course, see him on NBC Sports Boston. And you will see him again in the Big Three this summer.
You will.
He's back.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out. Like, everybody has picked their additional captain. Still looking for my guy.
This is what you do, though. This is what you did last. Like, you are maybe the only guy in that league that is singularly focused on winning. Like, I think a lot of guys.
No.
But like, picking teams, like, I mean, you.
No, I went with young guys, but.
Because you. Because
I thought those young guys would be in shape, but you don't got to be in that great of shape. Like, to dominate the Big Three. I'm telling you, you got to be able to defend your position one-on-one and score. And the team that won last year with Kenyon Martin and Al Harrington and Rashad McCann, those guys were good.
So, well, we'll
but
see.
But I'm pumped. I feel like I have a good advantage. Everybody already picked a guy. I can take the best player available. I don't know who else is out there, but I can sit and wait and see who the best player available is.
Do you have in your mind, you know, a dream?
Yeah, it's Paul Pierce.
Paul Pierce. Okay, yeah, I knew that.
Of course,
was Paul Pierce.
Of course. And he's coming for the retirement thing. I'll try to convince the Celtics to. I'll tell him. I'll say, Paul, if you don't play on my Big Three team, we're doing Isaiah Thomas tribute video.
I feel like Pierce would be a fantastic Big Three player.
Oh, it'd be amazing.
You don't need like super athleticism. The shot's still good. Like,
yeah,
he's still knocking
it
down.
Yeah, no, he'd be amazing. It'd be amazing. Oh.
All right, so a few things I want to get to here, and I want to begin with what's happening in Cleveland right now. The month of January, not kind to the Cavaliers, giving up points in bunches just a week ago, totally just destroyed for 148 by Oklahoma City. They make a lineup change, and you bring Tristan Thompson back. He's the five man. Kevin Love moves to the four. Jay Crowder out of the lineup. He's been a pretty big disappointment for them in the first half of the season. Is this just a cosmetic change? Are they shuffling the deck chairs in the Titanic, so to speak, or can this turn it around? I mean, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like me and you we are completely different on this one,
yes.
Right? Like, you believe the Cavs are toast, and I believe they're going to flip the switch.
Yes. I'm renting out my second bedroom already to other reporters who are coming in for the finals in June. So they need a Marriott. I'm like the Chris Mannix Marriott is what I am right here.
So is this wishful thinking so you can make an extra little bit of coin?
Just or wishing it into reality.
All right. So I just think there are moments in time where they do things where I'm like, I could see them turning it on. And right now, They're the team that are they're in their fourth year of being together, 3 years in a row. It's tough, right? It's tough to stay on top, but those teams flip a switch. Remember, I was on a team in 2010 that from Christmas Day on, I think we were below 500, I mean, there are, I mean, there's times when the Cavs are below 500, but I don't know if they'll play 500 ball from here on out. And we were like three possessions away from winning a championship. So we had guys that can flip the switch. And I know LeBron can. You know, I'm assuming that Dwayne Wade, I guess he can probably do it at times. So I just think that this team is going to be ready. I know what Isaiah Thomas is capable of. I agree with you. I don't think they're good up front, up the middle, with Derek, Calderon, and Isaiah on defense. I do agree with you. But I don't think that this Cavs team is done. I think they're going to make some moves. I've heard George Hill out there. That would be like a catastrophic move for like the Celtics' chances.
Yeah, people don't give George Hill enough credit. I think he's still a serviceable guy, but I think once you put George Hill on a contending team, you know, his game's going to ratchet up. And I think he can be a decent on-ball defender. We know he can make three-point shots. He can be your spot-up shooter there. But two things you said. One, I think the defense will improve with effort. You know, when I talk to coaches about that play the Cavs, one of the first things they bring up is that they're just not trying very hard, especially transition. Like, they're not getting back.
And there's another area. So it's also the multiple effort. You know, so I don't know the timing of this, but me and Chris just got done watching Warriors-Celtics, right? And those guys are scrambling all over the place, making multiple efforts time and time again, coming in, helping out Steph Curry, building out the shooters, contesting shots. Like, that's what it takes. And if you lose your edge, like 10% of your edge, I'm going to help, or I'm not going to really help, and I'm not going to really get out there. Or this, I don't want my man to score because I don't want to play the blame game thing. If you start doing that in the NBA, as good as players are, the fine line between being, you know, out of the league and in the league and an all-star to Hall of Famer, those margins change just by the effort that the other team gives on the defensive end. So I do assume that they're going to pick that up. I can't imagine them walking around like zombies during the playoffs.
Yeah, I can't either. I do wonder about the point of attack, though. Like, if teams are going to run pick and roll on the Cavs all night long, that's going to be a problem for them. Now, the distraction stuff on the outside, I don't think too much. I mean, Kevin Love has had a bullseye on his back since he got to Cleveland. I don't think that Kevin is going to be, you know, just be mentally broken by what's happening now.
No way.
But Isaiah, that's the big question. And look, you know, people criticizing Isaiah now, I don't know how you criticize. When Isaiah came back, one of the things I think we all said was, like, it's going to take time, right?
Yeah.
You don't come back from hip injury out since late May and become the old player you were. You have to give it a month, month and a half, and then see what happens. So the fact that he's struggling right now, anybody saying, oh my God, Isaiah, like, what, you know, it's over for him.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just dead wrong. I will say, I think he's having real problems finding his identity within this team. Last year, his identity was offensive weapon number one for Boston.
Yeah.
It was, here's the ball a lot of times, go make plays. In Cleveland, it's an entirely different dynamic. So I think it's twofold with Isaiah. When he gets his legs and rhythm back, which he will before the end of the season, that's a positive. But can he fit into that system enough to be a effective player, given his defensive limitations? Like, Ty Lue is going to have to make a decision in the fourth quarter. Do I play Isaiah Thomas because I know he's going to be able to be a lethal scorer, or do I play a defensive-minded guy, like maybe a George Hill if they get him, because I need stops more than I need Isaiah's offense?
Well, I think they're like, so for the Cavs, it's about winning a championship, right? I mean, I know as much of a mess as they look like right now, I think for them, just like no matter where they end up, if they don't win a championship, it's a disappointment because they have LeBron James on your team. So for them to have any chance of beating the Warriors, Isaiah Thomas has to be good. Even if they did get George Hill, right, I still think that they need a little bit more offensive punch. So the only way for them to get to that level, and Isaiah is more than serviceable on the defensive end against a guy like Steph Curry in a series. I think he would do fine against him. Or
I think that, but you were, I mean, he doesn't defend. He's not going to be able to. Like, they were, when they played Golden State last year, they were hiding Steph. One of the reasons they won, they were hiding Isaiah. One of the reasons they won that game in Oakland was because they could, I think it was Patrick McCaw that was in that Golden State game. Kevin Durant. I don't know. I mean, like, you remember the Eastern Conference playoffs? I mean, John Wall was gobbling him up when he had that matchup. I mean,
he also had 53 too.
You know, he'll score, yeah. But I mean, I think serviceable, I think, is a long way from that. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think what you're saying is right. Can he bring enough offensive firepower to negate what you see on the defensive end? Yeah, probably. You know, if you go back and start watching the finals, which I have been watching the finals of late. I actually have watched Game 7 today when Kyrie was really good in the building. And it's a much more defensive battle than I previously thought it was going into it. I thought originally I was thinking, well, geez, these high-scoring teams, Kyrie Irving's going off. No, no, no. That was like until Kyrie Irving hit that shot, like they didn't score for 5 straight minutes. So can he like fit into that type of identity? It'll be interesting to see if he can or not. But I do know, like knowing Isaiah, guys, if like here's a good, just an example to understanding the injury, right? You remember Goran Dragic, his wife had like some like problems with the baby and he like couldn't work out for an entire summer and he had a slow start, but by the end of the year, he was back to being the Goran Dragic. So Isaiah Thomas is doing like, and he had no injury. This is Isaiah Thomas dealing with injury. When he starts to get his rhythm back, he's going to be, as long as there's no long-term damage, which I don't know about, he's going to be fresher towards the end of the year because he's playing limited minutes and he didn't play for a certain amount of time. And it's a contract year for him, and I expect him to get paid. I think that he'll have a really good year towards the end of the year.
Are they better off bringing Isaiah off the bench? Only because Calderon, when he was in the starting lineup, the plus-minus is very good. They did get a lot of wins. Are they better off with Isaiah with the second unit?
Well, I will agree with you on this one. If they don't make a trade for George Hill or if they don't make a trade for some type of point guard to get really good defensively, it doesn't matter if they bring him off the bench at all, right? Yep. Like you're basing it off the team that you see right now. If they don't make any moves, I could see them maybe being in trouble. But they will really be bad up the middle. But I'm assuming they're going to make some type of move to get better defensively up the middle. So if that is the case, then probably the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Bring Isaiah off the bench. He has shown that he can play long stretches. The only issue with those guys that play off the bench, can they play like 15, 16 straight minutes? You know, with a limited timeout in the second quarter that was taken out. I don't know if he can or if he can't. We'll have to see if he can get to that point. But, you know, I do think probably if they get a guy like George Hill, then yeah, Isaiah should come off the bench.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall in Ty Lue's office when that conversation takes place with Isaiah. I don't know how.
I know. I mean, they're still going to, you know, like even guys coming off the bench, you can early sub guys, yeah. Get them in with, you know, 7 minutes to go in the first quarter. You could do a lot of things and be creative.
Starters are de facto starters sometimes. Like if you start a game and you're taken out with 6 minutes, does it even matter if you come off the bench? Like Kevin Durant used to do that last year. Carmelo's even doing it at times now where you start the game, but you're the first guy yanked, so you can play with the second unit guys a little bit.
Exactly, later. Exactly. I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal if he doesn't start, but the only reason why it would make it a big deal is because I know, you know, Isaiah Thomas, as good as he is, he hasn't really cashed in like a lot of these other guys have.
Yeah. All right, let me move out west. Oklahoma City right now playing great basketball, the best basketball of the season. This was a team, Scal, that a month ago was ranked in the bottom third in the NBA in offensive efficiency. Now, bottom, I think top five still defense efficiency and inside the top 10 in offensive efficiency, posting some eye-popping offensive numbers. Carmelo has evolved once again after evolving to a power forward at the start of the season. They're creeping up the standings. What do we make of Oklahoma City, and is it time to start really thinking of them as a threat in the Western Conference?
So this whole thing, initially when the move was made, I had them as the second-best team in the Western Conference, but when this whole thing unfolded and I'm watching them play, I'm like, why are you guys struggling offensively? Like, you guys are supposed to struggle defensively when you get together to build trust, to understand your limitations as an aging player with Carmelo Anthony. But they were really good defensively, swarming, blocking shots, athletic. But offensively, they struggled. If you had the script one, right, to be bad offensively at the start of the season and then really good defensively, I think it's probably the better way to go. I do think they're going to be the second best team in the Western Conference. I do think, especially with the whole mess going on with San Antonio right now, I do think they're going to be in the Western Conference Finals. And it's going to be interesting because Steven Adams is sort of a beast and he's no slouch out there. Like, yeah. The Warriors are going to have their hands full with a guy like that. Paul George is playing at a level. They do match up well with the Warriors, and what is Russell Westbrook capable of doing against a team like that? Can he stay disciplined enough to like stay with Steph Curry over this time, or will he go for steals, go for rebounds, and end up getting caught? But I did at the beginning of the season. I lost faith in them as well, and then I probably will say, as of right now, I think they're the second best team in the West.
Well, it's the same kind of the same conversation we had about Isaiah. I mean, you can't throw three guys that were top 20 in usage rate together, say it's going to take some time for him to work it out, and then be stunned when it's, oh my God, taking some time for them to work it
but
out.
But USA basketball seems to work out like that every single time.
That helps me going up against like Lithuania sometimes.
Okay, no, I don't disagree, but just like the style that they played. Right now, what do we have? We have like Russell being more like Russell, Carmelo being a stretch four. Like,
isn't it easy though to be selfless when it's a 3-week schedule versus being like selfless over an 82 game? I mean, guys are willing to sacrifice their games in Rio and London and
yeah,
that.
But I think they're being, I thought they were being, so Carmelo, I'm sorry, Russell Westbrook was being too selfless. At
yes,
the beginning
well, I agree.
Of the
I agree.
And Paul George, like, as good as Paul George is, I you know, like, there are points when you look at him and say, like, man, this guy's unbelievable. He still takes a bunch of contested twos out of nowhere. Like, if you're so unbelievable, like, when I watch LeBron and he just, like, uses that big body of his and gets to the rim and gets the layup, that's what makes him unbelievable. You're getting a layup, you're making it look easy when it's not. Like Paul George, you're taking tough shots and missing them when you should, you have the skill set to get to the basket. They're playing now like they're supposed to play. Russell's is still who – Tasmanian devil out there just like creating havoc and running up the floor, pushing the ball, sometimes shooting on two guys or whatever. Paul George, good combination of – outside, you know, playing off of Russell, but also being aggressive and making plays. And Carmelo Anthony's now a stretch guy as opposed to an isolation scorer. So I assume that they'd be able to figure this out. I was shocked when they didn't.
Kind of an amazing evolution for Carmelo, too, who was so beginning like this, embracing being a four-man was something Carmelo never did in New York. Was,
no.
You know, that was the reason Mike D'Antoni quit out of New York. That's not like one of, it was the reason that, you know, Carmelo was the reason that he walked away. He comes to Oklahoma City. He embraces being a four. He was still playing ISO heavy basketball early on, but over the last month, like you said, he's taken on the spot up shooter role, more comfortable as that third type of option. Also, these guys actually seem to like each other.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't so sure about that, how they'd, you know, chemistries would mix. I know there's some USA basketball-ish connections for some of these guys, but that's not the same thing. Playing together, same locker room. You heard the Paul George comments recently to ESPN where, you know, he was just gushing over playing with Russ and being a teammate of Russell Westbrook. They seem to have developed some real chemistry in the locker room. And beyond the off-the-court stuff, Scott, I think that's a pretty important development in all this.
Especially for the guy who's about to be a free agent.
Yeah,
no
that
question
too.
About it. And then we can't – I just think that Steven Adams, like, impacts the game. And he does it from a big man standpoint the right way. He does not like asking for the ball, give me the ball. He just goes and works. If you don't throw him the ball, he doesn't like put his hands in the air. He just does his job. And I think he continues to improve. Their coaching staff has done a really good job with him working on some of his deficiencies as he's gone along. And he's a beast down there. So you have like a lot of weapons out there. Terrence Ferguson, I mean, who knew who's
how big a loss is Andre Roberson for them, though?
Yes.
Done for the season with that patellar tendon.
No question about it. But sometimes, in a way, I wonder if they become, you know, even a better – like, obviously, they're going to drop off defensively. But it could be interesting how they could become even better offensively with him being out of the lineup.
All right, let me finish with the team we just called the game of, Boston. Really have struggled since that London trip. And I'm surprised by that because – they jammed so many games into the first 2 months of the season because they had to, because they chose to stretch kind of the London trip out, play one game in 9 days. I thought that break would give them kind of a, would have a rejuvenative effect on that team. It hasn't to this point. They lose a couple of games at home when they come back. They go on this West Coast road trip where they're now, we're recording this on Saturday after the Warriors game, so they're now 1-2 on this trip. What is the difference you've seen in this Boston team over the last few weeks?
So you mentioned a couple of things like the Jason Tatum dropping off a little bit. Teams are starting to key in on guys. I think personally, this team has been the hardest team I've ever had to cover because they're really good defensively at some times, really good defensive rebound team, and really bad also on other nights, right? And we blamed a lot of that on the schedule. But now the schedule has passed, and they're doing the same type of thing. So just, and I think what you have to look at, and I hate this excuse, but it's true. Teams that have young guys that you have to count on night in and night out, they're going to be inconsistent. So you're hitting a stretch right now where they've been inconsistent. They've faced certain things, like they went in and they had a 41-point swing to against Philly in London and embarrassed them. Philly came in with a big-time edge, beat them. They ran into an Anthony Davis, who was an absolute beast, beat him. They make one mistake against Kuzma. He has 17 in the Lakers. They beat him, right? And then Clippers win, but the Golden State Warriors, that was a tough game. So they're 1-4 since returning. But to me, it's the consistency of the young guys. It's hard. It's hard to be a young guy and put up stats and also do all the little things it takes to win, because when you start to struggle, you start blaming the offense. Oh, I got to get this. I got to do better. I got to get more shots. But the reality is, it's like the smallest little details that you got to pay attention to that they have not been able to do consistently. We see him drop 37 in the first quarter and then 17 in the second. We've seen a 12-point quarter. I forgot to throw Orlando in there as well. A 12-point quarter against Orlando, where Orlando outscores him 30-12, like that type of stuff. It's just really hard for this team. And Kyrie Irving, as much as he has to carry the load, his attitude has been fantastic. You know, like, we all got to get better. We got to improve. It's not just about me. He's not asking for help or anything like that. So I think just Brad will figure this whole thing out. And then as a team, these young guys will get through this rookie wall or this first or second year wall.
Now, let me ask you a little bit more about the rookie wall there, because you believe in it. I believe in it. How did, and for a guy like Tatum, who I think is so important to this team's success because of how he's capable of playing on both ends of the floor and the desperate need for another scoring option when Kyrie's either off the floor or doesn't have it going or is getting multiple defenders at him. The rookie wall, from your experiences, how does it manifest itself? Is it in physical fatigue because of all the games? Is it mental fatigue because of all the travel? You know, where is the where does the how does the wall hit a guy, and how do they break through it?
So, like, you play men's league?
Yes, poorly,
so,
but yeah.
Right? Like, how jacked up are you for a men's league game that happens once a week, right?
Very.
Right? So, in college, you're jacked up for your one or two games a week, right? When you start and you're finally in the NBA, whatever, you got some money, it's like you're starting, it's the attention, whatever it is, you're jacked up for that. Eventually, you become numb to the games. So I think the drop off a little bit is mental. You're like, man, we got another one. Wait a minute, I got this back to back. Wait, I just got in at 4 o'clock in the morning and have to play again. So a lot of that is all your mental side. I just think they don't lose interest in playing basketball. I think they don't get as jacked up for games as they did when they first started. So I think that's what the rookie wall. And I also believe from your senior year, or let's call it your last year in college, mm-hmm. you play the whole year out, then you start getting ready for the draft, then you get drafted and the coaches have you in, they're working you and they're showing you film, and you're in the offseason in the gym 3 hours a day, and that leads right up to training camp where you're there. So where everyone else sort of gets a break and coaches aren't working with vets 3 hours a day, teaching them every single thing on the offensive end. It's just a lot for a guy who was a rookie the year or in college the year before. Now, is it necessary to be good in the future? Absolutely. But is it the best way to be good that season? No, it's not the best way. That's not the best way to develop that year. It's the best way to develop 2, 3, 4 years down the road. And guys will tell you when they go through that and they maybe remember working hard and being in the gym twice a day and getting there at 7 a.m. and all that stuff, they remember that and they think it makes them a better player down the road.
Let me just ask you one more thing about Boston. We know that the front office is aggressive out there. We know the assets that they have, the disabled player exception they can use. In a general sense, like if you're looking at the type of player that this team needs to succeed in the playoffs or to upgrade the team, is it a bench scorer? Is it more interior strength? If they're only able to get kind of one player before March 1st or before the start of the playoffs, what kind of player do you think would be the most valuable to this team?
All right, so this is going to be like a little confusing, right? It's a player that you can sign now. So use your DPE. Next year, give them 120% raise, which is allowed under the collective bargaining agreement, right? So what's that, 8.5, then you give them a 120% raise off of that 8.5 next season. Maybe it's a handshake deal, and you increase your salary for a potential trade down the road. Now, there is a chance with the way that Aaron Baines is playing that he'll get too much money and the Celtics can't match him. Remember, 1 year deal.
Yep.
They can only offer him a little bit of a raise, right? So he might be gone. So I think it looks like a big man that you're looking at to sign for about $10 million next year, which you can convince him, basically, whenever that is, like maybe it's like an April 1st to the end of the season, it could be $8.5 million, mm-hmm. $8.5 million, not prorated, and you convince him, like, please come back. Now, obviously, the agent can leave and tell him to leave and everything like that, but you're basically giving him $18.5 million for a season and 1 month's work. Mm-hmm. If you can convince a guy to do that, I think that that will be the guy that they go after. It won't be a bench scorer, a guard, something they're looking for this year. Now, if it also helps them this year, yes. But that contract at whatever it is also has to be a tradable contract in the future.
Sounds an awful lot like Greg Monroe right there.
It sounds exactly like Greg.
My sense is that if Monroe's not traded before the trade deadline, he gets bought out and at this point we're just sort of speculating, but he does kick the crap out of the Celtics every time he plays against them. So no, there's a pretty good taste in the mouth of Boston brass about Greg Monroe.
Yeah, there's nobody else out there. I mean, Houston's not going to part with Nene. It sounds to me a whole lot like Greg Monroe.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scal, you've earned your Insert X gift card. I will cut that in. I'll just put a line saying,
I hope it's Blue Apron.
Sheets of some kind, maybe a mattress. I mean, you're a big guy. Maybe you can get a pillow top. We'll get somebody to help you out.
Yeah. The MeUndies.
Yes, the MeUndies. I'll just go with the. When our good friends at MeUndies were sponsoring this, I actually took the bag of stuff that they sent me, left it in my radio studio, and people actually picked through it. They actually picked through the bag and took stuff and took it home with them.
I just love when you guys read the MeUndies ads.
don't say you guys, because it's our former colleague, Adrian Wojnarowski, who when he had to read the MeUndies thing, and you know Woj, it was the most awkward thing ever.
It was so good. I can listen to Woj do the ticket read. But the MeUndies read, that's the one that had me rolling. No one ever hits the 15-second button back to rehear the read when Woj reads the MeUndies. It was great. Great podcast stuff.
Scal, man, thanks for staying up late, man. I appreciate it.
You got it.
All right, before I get to Seth Davis, I want to tell my listeners about a great new deal from the folks over at Mattress Firm. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping in America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this. They are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120 sleep night trial to ensure perfection and 120 night low price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. My guest this week is one of the best college basketball minds out there. You know him from CBS Sports. He's now the managing editor of The Fieldhouse, part of the Athletic website. He's the author of the upcoming book, Getting to Us, How Great Coaches Make Great Teams. That's going to be out March 6th. Seth Davis, I think you've got a lot on your plate these days, my friend.
I do. People will care what I have to say for about two more months, mm-hmm. and then I disappear, sort of, although with my job at the Athletic, that probably is less likely.
Did you remove your SI tattoo from your shoulder like I did, or did you?
You know, it's too painful to do that, and it's not on my shoulder, Chris. Don't pretend like you don't know that.
I thought I saw it like the armband sort of thing. You have the SI across the arm.
Well, there's a lot of us.
Floating
out there, former SI staffers. But you see, you're like a multimedia superstar, I thought I was spread out.
I learned from you, Seth. I mean, I got to SI after you when you were already doing TV, radio, books. You know, you were in original CNNSI, right? Back in the
yes.
day?
Yes. It's funny. Once in a while, not so much anymore, but for a long time, when I would do a radio show or something like this, and he's from CNNSI, and I'm like, well, that thing went under like 10 years ago, mm-hmm. like for something that very few people watched.
But, Why didn't that work? I mean, that seems like something that maybe now, because of what the advent
of all
these...
they weren't fully committed to mm-hmm. it. But it certainly was a great idea, and it was ESPN News before there was ESPN News.
Yeah.
But, you know, ESPN News became part of ESPN, and that was their business. That's what they did. So, you know, the CNN folks, I don't think ever totally committed the resources. But it was an idea that it was definitely ahead of its time, and it was a great – it gave me a lot of reps.
Yeah.
You know, then people didn't necessarily see it, but – when I had my opportunity with CBS, it was like I came out of nowhere. I was like, actually, I've been doing this for a few years.
It's always
nobody's
nice
seen
to,
it.
It's always nice to screw up on stuff that nobody's seen.
No question.
I had that,
yeah.
I had that experience on a few.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Fumbling and stumbling through them. I'm glad you're here because we're entering kind of, we're getting towards February conference tournament schedule. And this is when the NBA teams start to really dig into these college stars. They look into their warts, their pluses, their minuses. Before I get to the guys in potentially the upcoming draft, I want to look at a few guys that came out of the 17 draft and get your thoughts on how they've played and if you're surprised or not. Let's start with a guy who went to your alma mater, their Duke, Jason Tatum. Been huge for Boston. Like, came into this league, came in 19 years old, you know, expecting one role, and then Gordon Hayward goes down for the foreseeable future, and he steps in, and he has been, I think, the best rookie from that 2017 draft class. Any surprise to you that Tatum has been this effective this early?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I certainly knew he was a great prospect and a great talent. The one thing that I don't think anybody saw coming is just how well he's shooting the three ball. Is he still leading the league in three-point percentage?
He's up there.
He's been, I know, for most of the season. And that, of course, in today's, you know, pace and space era is a perfect dimension. I was actually a little bit more of a fan of Josh Jackson. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I was influenced by a lot of the NBA guys that I work with on television because they loved Josh Jackson and his elasticity. And it's kind of a running joke with me and Brendan Haywood, actually, because he sort of watching Tatum, like, you know, I don't know that athletically at that level can he be a great NBA player. But when you're this good of a shooter, it lowers the bar in terms of how athletic you have to be. You don't have to be a good athlete at all if you have great deep shooting range because the defenders have to close out on you and one shot fake and you can get by him and now you're playing. So, yeah, I mean, certainly I knew he was a really good prospect, but the fact that he has this kind of range with this kind of efficiency, which just sets up the rest of his game. So it's been, I can't say I'm shocked, but I'm definitely surprised.
You know, offensively, when I saw him play in summer league, you started hearing the Paul Pierce comparisons because of the footwork. I mean, a lofty comparison to be sure, but he was facing guys up and his footwork was great. Like, he just looked like you know, a 25-year-old who'd been in the league for 5-6 years with that offensive footwork. The big surprise, and what's keeping him on the floor, frankly, is his defense. I mean, he is a much better defensive player than I think anyone gave him credit for. Always has had that great length, and length is maybe one of the top three most valuable commodities in today's NBA. You want switchability, you want versatility. Jason Tatum has got that, but he has been able to come in and defend everybody, multiple positions. And I think Boston, as he fills out at, you know, the tender age of 19, as he gets to like 20,
amazing, isn't it? 19. 20,
22, 23.
You remember 19?
Not so much anymore. Not so much anymore. But like, as he fills out, I mean, this year, I mean, he's going to have to be a big part of what they do, but it was Hayward comes back and he fills out. Think about an offensive lineup with Horford, Tatum, and Hayward in that front court. Like, how do you stop that offensively?
Well, here's the thing. You talk about his defense. You look at Jason Tatum's body. You look at his physical gifts. You look at his skill set. The only reason why he wouldn't be a great defensive player is because he's not committed. Now, it's a different mindset now. I mean, 2 years ago, he was in a senior in high school, right? So does he have that type of mindset? But he should be a great defensive player. And I think there are a lot of NBA players who are quite I think defense is becoming more and more important now in the NBA. I mean, this is obviously your wheelhouse, mm-hmm. but the versatility of the defense. And then when you start, you know, evaluating, you know, the big men, like I'm sure we'll talk about DeAndre Ayton, and then also Jaren Jackson of Michigan State is the other one who comes to mind. When I'm watching big men on defense, we're used to their post defense and rim protection. I'm looking, can they defend and hedge on ball screens 20 feet away from the basket and then be able to recover and have that type of versatility. So, yeah, I mean, I can't say I've been around Tatum a ton, but I've certainly been around him enough to see that he's a kid of impeccable character. I mean, from what I see, and I know he's got a great personal background with his mom and all that. And, you know, listen, he was at a program, you know, where there's obviously a culture of defense and winning and class and, you know, carrying yourself a certain way, practicing a certain way, developing certain habits. He's around, you know, even though he's only at Duke a year, he was around a lot of the Duke guys, the older Duke guys who come back. And then, you know, being in Boston and being with someone like Brad Stevens. So it's early, but, you know, he's off to a great start in terms of the cultures that he's been exposed to.
When how I knew Tatum was going to be something was early, it's like it was mid-November, the Golden State game in Boston. And for 3.5 quarters, he was terrible. Like, he was terrible, but Brad Stevens kept him on the floor. This is a kid rookie playing in his first month plus of the season, and he's on the floor playing poorly against the best team in the league. You know what? It paid off. Fourth quarter, end of the game, he made a three-pointer that I think gave Boston the lead, and then two free throws that iced it at the end. I mean, you know, Brad, as you know as well as anyone, great basketball mind. For him to trust Tatum in those situations, when you have veteran options on the bench you could go to, that to me told me a lot about, you know, where he thinks Tatum is and what he can become.
Well, obviously, we'll be plugging my book a million times.
Yes.
During this interview.
This is two.
But one of the... we're only two? I'm slacking.
We're at two.
Well, it's not out till March 6th, but you can't bring your order on Amazon or wherever books are sold. One of the traits that I talk about in the book is empathy. And Brad Stevens is one of the coaches that I visited with and wrote about. And to be able to understand what that young man is going through and to be able to coach him in a way that's unique to what's happening in his mind at that time, as maybe his own confidence is waning. And one thing I love about Brad is his comportment on the sidelines. I'm a big fan of just being cool. I see some of these college coaches like Sean Miller is just out of control, man. And then it's Fran McCaffrey. And it's like, well, what do you tell your kids, you know, when there's a big, you tell them to keep their composure in a big moment. So, you know, I think Brad is transferring a lot of that onto Tatum, who is a naturally confident person, but would, you know, very naturally not feel confident in that situation. So to be able to trust him, and obviously playing the long game, even if it didn't work out, and even if he hadn't played well to catch your eye or win the game or whatever they did, he would have known that his coach trusted him. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to play poorly. You just got here, kid. We're playing the long game. And to instill that confidence in a young player has got to be an incredible gift.
Yeah, and Boston gets Tatum, who looks like a 5 to 10 year all-star eventually down the line, and they get what could be a top five pick in that trade with Philadelphia. The Sixers, I don't know what they have right now in Markelle Fultz, who has only played a handful of games this season, and there are these videos set that keep coming out of him that are being analyzed like the Zapruder film, you know, of him having a jump shot or a set shot that looks like Chuck Hayes shooting a jump shot. I mean, it's something happened to Markelle Fultz over the last 6 months, and I still can't get a clear story of what it is. I mean, I had heard from people that were in some of his workouts, and they said that he was looking like a guy that was starting to change his shot. For whatever reason, I don't understand, was starting to change his shot. And then over the course of the summer, something else happened. He got hurt, and now he's back, presumably healthy, but has a hitch in his shot that you never saw in the college game. I mean, what do you think is going on with Fultz?
So I first saw Markelle Fultz play at the NBA Top 100 camp in, I think it was in Virginia. No, they moved around. May have been in Charlotte. And I'd never heard of him, had no idea who he was. But it was one of those things, and it wasn't because he was like dunking on people. It was the way that he played. And I remember asking someone, like, who is that guy? Oh, is it DeMatha? I'm like, oh, kind of made a note of it. Like, he's pretty good. I didn't know he was like a top player, you know. And then I saw him again in Colorado Springs. And he was doing, you know, one of these training camps, and he played great in the games. He was the best player there. I came out of there saying he's going to be the first pick in the draft. This is before his freshman season in Washington. But my most searing memory of that experience came when they were taking a break. It was like a water break, right? So there's nothing going on. And Markelle Fultz starts shooting. And it was like those videos you see of Steph Curry warming up where he's shooting in the tunnel for fun. Mm. And he's just stepping back. And I'm telling you, Chris, effortlessly flicking the ball into the basket as he's moving towards the half-court line. It was amazing. And I watched that, and I said, this kid has a gift. You watched him shoot at Washington. People said, oh, well, the team's not winning. I'm like, what else do you want him to do? He's scoring like 20 points a game. He's shooting 47 from three. Just one of the most lovely, pure strokes I've ever seen. The idea that he or anybody else would try to change that on any level. And I was actually interested in asking you, like, what happened to this kid? And you're saying, you're telling me that you haven't even gotten the full story.
I mean, just heard he was working with a personal coach.
I want to know who told him. I want to talk to that guy who told him change.
And 41 plus percent three-point shooter in college.
Yeah.
You don't change when you're 41. Like, Lonzo didn't change.
Yeah. And by the way, that's 41% when you've got three guys on you and you're on a losing team, and the only thing the opposing coach cares about is you not scoring points. Mm-hmm. So you talk about getting him into an NBA situation. So it's absolutely frustrating and mystifying. I see those same videos. You know, you talk about Chuck Hayes. I think of Charles Barkley swinging a golf club or Chuck Knobloch. So now it's in his head. So I don't know who did this to him, but whoever did it should never give anybody advice on anything again. I'm talking about restaurants, movies, music. Keep your mouth shut the rest of your life, whoever told Markel Fultz to change a jump shot.
All right, a couple of the guys I want to hit you on real quick. Perhaps the biggest surprise early on, at least in the lottery, Donovan Mitchell. You know, the way he has played coming out of Louisville, you could see in summer league that he had sort of the defensive intensity. You could see he had the aggressiveness, but he has been the complete package for Utah early on. You know, from beyond the arc, going to the paint, he looks like a starting. You know, I don't know what position he is yet, but that's something that, you know, really anybody team's out there worried about. We talk about versatility, like who gives a damn anymore?
Right. Positionless.
You can be positionless. I mean, coaches love positionless players. What did teams miss about him? What has he shown from what the stuff that you've seen in the NBA that maybe he didn't look like he had in the college ranks?
Skills. Skills. Tightened skills. When he first got to Louisville, his athleticism immediately jumped out at you. I mean, even a schmo like me can see it. You know, I mean, just a great athlete, above the rim, spectacular dunks, NBA-level athlete. And, you know, there are not a lot of those in college, frankly. You know, the better college players, because of the way they play or maybe the system they run or the way the coach features them. So the athleticism was there. And then again, you know, playing for someone like Rick Pitino for 3 years, you're going to learn how to play defense. And the standards on the defensive end are exceptionally high. So you're going to learn to play the game the right way. What you never know is how hard a player will work on his game once he leaves that setting.
I agree. That's
right?
The toughest, you just toughest
don't
know. Thing to know.
You just don't know. Will they have that grit? Will they have that persistence? In the quiet moments, you know, the mornings where you wake up and you don't feel like going to the gym, do you still go to the gym? Are you watching what you eat? Are you sleeping right? Are you not partying? Are you, you know, you hear this often, you know, when players go from high school to college, you know, college coaches, they're good kids. They want to win. They think they're working hard. They have no idea what it really means to work hard. And so that, instinct of self-improvement is very, very hard to, it's impossible to predict. You want to take all your, that's why they have all these interviews and they try to do their background as he to try to find that out. So I'm certainly not surprised that he can compete in the NBA from an athletic standpoint. He showed skills, enough skills to make you think that he'd have a chance. But until you actually see it in action, you know, can he put together that whole package? And again, to be doing it this soon is, you'd have to say it's a surprise. Obviously, he was picked, what, 13th?
13th, yeah.
So 12 NBA teams at least are surprised that he's as good.
26 passed on Kyle Kuzman. I don't know what's going on. The Lakers have nothing to be excited about these days, whether it's LeVar, his drama. I mean, Brandon Ingram, I guess, has made some improvements. But Kyle Kuzma coming in as a rookie, man, that's another guy. I mean, you know, coming out of Utah, what was it the same thing? Is it the skill set improvement?
I want to see. You got your laptop up. I mean, I don't think he had a very high three-point percentage in college. I don't think there was much to indicate at the college level that he was going to do this. And, you know, if this were 10 or 15 years ago in the NBA, he might not be doing it. You know, I think that these stretch four.
3 years at Utah, never shot better than 32%.
Okay, there you go. And I remember, in the coverage up to the draft, we were kind of, you know, burrowing in on these guys. It was like Kyle Kuzma's moving up the board. And it was like, why? Well, he shot really well at the combine. And I'm like, well, just because a guy shoots well for 3 days in an unstructured setting, like,
yeah, combines can be overrated.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's
look,
like,
at my wingspan.
Yeah, exactly. But he was obviously doing well in workouts. I mean, he was obviously showing something, because, you know, even he went, what, 20th or 26th?
27th, yeah.
But that was even, you know, at the end of, if you track all the mock drafts, I would doubt if anybody, you know, at this time a year ago had Kyle Kuzma even in the first round, and maybe a mid late second round. Utah was not a real good team. He's not some spectacular athlete. I don't know. Again, it's what makes it so fun. You know, it's like, I love people when, you know, people like you and me give opinions that turn out to be wrong. Ah, oh, you're wrong. I'm like, of course you're wrong. All wrong all the time. That's part of the fun of being is being surprised. And he just found a shooting stroke just in time. And I was at Summer League, and he played great in Vegas when I saw him. I was like, oh my God, he can really shoot. He can really shoot. And now again, the game has come his way, and he's at a team that doesn't have veteran scorers at his position, and a lot of things falling into place for him. But good on him for whatever he did. You know, whoever his shooting coach is should maybe go work with Markel Fultz, because there's a confidence
to him as well. That, and I was out in LA last week just watching him and kind of, you know, just being out there. I mean, physically, he's actually not really, they say, a lot more skinny. Like, Brandon Ingram was really skinny. He's not, Kuzma is not like that. And he just seems to have this moxie out there that maybe that comes with, maybe it's a chicken and the egg kind of thing where he's making shots and he has that. But going to the basket, I saw him play against Boston recently, you know, making plays, playmaking. I mean, he just seems to have this the total package out there that can be really unearthed over the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's great for him. It's just hard to anticipate where that comes from and why a guy who never was a great three-point shooting or even a good three-point shooter in college all of a sudden can do it at the NBA level. I mean, it's just, you know, all the pieces falling into place for him. What are people in LA saying these days about Lonzo's jump shot, by the way, and that form?
Well, they've warmed up to it a little bit.
I mean, the ball goes in, right? I mean, I know, can have some lousy games, but he can have some good games too.
At this point, who cares if it is ugly? If it goes in, that's really all that matters.
Right.
Kevin Martin was one of the best shooters in the NBA for years. He had a hideous jump shot.
Right.
Sean Marion, hideous jump. I mean, Reggie Miller had a hideous jump
shot.
Like one of the great
elbow
shooters.
Elbow flying out.
Like, that wasn't, you know, as long as it's, I mean, the problem with Lonzo is, you know, the shot is what, like left to right,
right?
He's going to have some trouble off the dribble, I think, more than the 3-point shot.
Correct.
As he has to do all that movement, team's going to be able to contest, I think, mid range shots.
Yeah, the mid range is actually more of a problem than the 3-point shot. But shooting is, you know, to me, it's like there's a mysterious aspect to shooting. You know, it's feel, it's touch, it's rhythm. Obviously, there's mechanics, and obviously, there's work and repetition that goes into it. But there have been enough examples. I always talk about Aaron Kraft. Remember the point guard at Ohio State? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was like a super intelligent kid, like, you know, 4.0 GPA, right? And worked his tail off, and was obviously a very good athlete to be the starting point guard on a great team at Ohio State. Worked as hard as a man can possibly work on his jump shot, and could never make a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a mysterious thing that has that ball going in the basket.
No question. All right, let's go on to the fun stuff. The 2018 draft, and you know, I'm very much in the fledgling stages of talking to people about this draft, but there does seem to be a real excitement about the players that could be at the top of this draft. I guess my first question for you is this the kind of year where there's going to be a Ben Simmons that separates a clear consensus number one, or do you think it's going to be a handful of guys that are in the mix that whoever gets taken is going to kind of depend on the team, what they need, and what their opinion of a certain guy is?
I think there will probably be very definitive top tier of maybe three or four guys. Now, I haven't seen Doncic. I mean, people say he's terrific.
Mixed bag, though. I had one exec say, like, a souped-up Hedo Turkoglu, and that's...
Is that a compliment?
I think it's like a kind of a compliment, not for someone that might take in the top three. No, I don't know if you want, like...
I mean, I've seen all these... Now, I'm seeing mocks maybe have him at two, but I mean, I've seen a lot of these mocks have him at number one. So there are, you know, certainly a couple of players at the top who are going to separate themselves, perhaps, from the rest of the pack. I think the DeAndre Ayton conversation is going to be fascinating because tell me another player like DeAndre Ayton, even right now in the NBA. I mean, he's like DeAndre Jordan, except he can shoot.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about he can shoot threes now. Mm-hmm. He can shoot threes. And he's really great in that face-up mid-range, you know, 10 to 12. I call him a zone buster. We're used to thinking of zone busters as outside shooting. Mm-hmm. But now all of these zones are predicated to take away the three-point shot, and the middle is wide open. All you do is put Ayton in the middle. And he can make that face up. So he's skilled, but he is a man child, 7'1", 270.
Yeah.
And remember, he's a kid from the Bahamas, came to the game late, which is, you know, now that I have kids, it's like, you know, the specialization in sports, which is just totally stupid American thing. It's a case for, you know, somebody playing soccer for many years and then transferring over to basketball. But he is a classic five man.
Mm.
Much more so than where he's not Kevin Durant, right? He is a classic back to the basket, rim protecting power player. He will dunk on you and then go dunk on your family, right? That's what he does best. And the game has moved away from that. It reminds me of the Greg Oden Durant debate. Now, Oden got hurt, but I still, if Oden didn't get hurt, he would have been a great player, no question. So DeAndre Ayton is a better athlete than Oden was, but Oden, you know, had a lot of skills. And so it'll be interesting when people say, well, yeah, he's great, but is he another Greg Oden? You know, is this not where the game is going? Or do we have this freak of nature who is obviously big and powerful and athletic and highly skilled and highly motivated? And like, you're crazy to pass on. I would take him first.
Mm-hmm.
But that conversation you watch is going to be very interesting heading into the draft.
A guy not playing right now is Michael Porter, and there was a lot of excitement to watch him play. Got hurt, isn't playing for Missouri this season. What do you think we'd be saying about Michael Porter if he was playing right now? I mean, would we be giddy about him? I mean, most mocks have him inside that top five, some inside the top three.
Yeah, we definitely would. First of all, I think Michael Porter is going to come back and play.
You do?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I would guess mid to late February, I think he's going to come back, and there's a lot going on out there. You know, Michael Porter is, I mean, I hate to compare anybody to Kevin Durant, but he is kind of that scoring machine mold as a 6'9", not as big as Durant. He's more like 6'9". But he is at and would have been playing and will be playing at a school that will feature him completely and run everything through him. And he is a natural, he's a great shooter and he's a great scorer. Is he a freak athlete? I'm not sure I'd quite go there, but he's certainly good enough. And again, you combine his size and his skills, highly versatile. It was real disappointment for Missouri and frankly for college basketball, because I think these stories where these kids go to the not Duke and not Kentucky become far more interesting for the sport. So I'm hoping sometime in the next month or so he'll be back.
As long as they make the tournament. Like when Ben Simmons went to LSU, it's like, oh, God.
And Fultz, too. Yeah. Well, they're Fultz, close. You know, they're losing. And he would be it would be interesting for the selection committee, because whatever games they've lost without him, it's not like they don't count, but you know they didn't have him. So if he comes back and it shows that he's playing well and it shows that they're playing better and they're kind of close, that committee could say, hey, you know, now that they have him, they're a much better team. And by the way, they're not stupid. It's better for the tournament to have Missouri and Michael Porter in the bracket. So that would be very interesting if that happens.
Let me follow up on Ayton real quick. The NBA, you know, we were 10 years ago, we're like stretch four. Everybody's got to have a stretch four. Nowadays, everybody's a stretch five. Even guys that weren't stretch five, like Marc Gasol and Brook Lopez, they're hanging out beyond the three-point line, working on that part of the shot. Do you think Ayton is like the stretch five material? You think he's going to be
definitely
shooting NBA threes?
I think it will be a part of his game. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be featured back there. I don't think he's be like Kevin Love, right? Mm-hmm. I think he is a power player at the rim, great defender and rebounder. But to go to my earlier point, it's his defense on ball screens that is unbelievable. Like you've got to get one of these clips of him, you know, hedging and recovering and blocking a shot. The other guy in college who's
doing
that.
Pick and roll defense not that important in the NBA.
Yeah, I know, right? It's amazing.
Can Cleveland take him right now? Can Cleveland
maybe
grab him?
But you know what? It's like I'm on this big zone kick in college. Are people even playing zone in the NBA? They're allowed
really
to, though,
like,
right?
They do 3-2. Like, yeah, they do mix up.
But they're
zones
allowed to
like
play
Dallas
zone in the NBA.
A little bit. Well, not traditional zone. You can't plant a guy in the middle in the NBA. You can play like a 3-2 zone.
Okay, so they have hybrid zone. In college, there's no restrictions on what defense. I'm like, why would anybody in college play man-to-man?
Yeah.
There's not a – there. You can count on one hand.
Like
exactly. I mean, you can count on one hand the number of players who have the type of size and ability, because anybody who's big, just put him in a ball screen, and then you're playing in space and he's toast, you know? So, but Ayton's ability to do that now is top shelf. Mm-hmm. I mean, as good as he is offensively, he's that much better. And like I said, the other one, other guy in the draft who can do that as well that I've seen is Jaren Jackson at Michigan State. 6'11", super long, hedge out on the ball screen, recover, get back to the rim, block a shot. That's a special, special skill. Mm.
The biggest story nationally, and maybe a bit of a conundrum for the NBA executives I talked to, is Trae Young at Oklahoma, kind of viewed as maybe the first guy to come from the Steph Curry generation, to grow up watching Steph Curry at Davidson and then in the NBA and pattern his game after them, just doing some unbelievable things offensively. How would you evaluate him, though, as an NBA prospect? Because the people I talk to are, I would say right now, the ones I've talked to say, all right, I got him in like the 8-9 range with a lot of room to improve if he has a monster NCAA tournament.
Can we not overthink this, please?
We have to overthink this
because otherwise you and I would have to go out and get a job.
Yeah.
A real job. He's leading the country in scoring and assists. His shooting percentages are off the charts. What are we even debating? I mean, what are we talking about? Are we worried that he won't be able to make an NBA three? He's making NBA threes. And again, he's a good athlete. He's quick. He's agile. He's graceful. When you are that good of a shooter with that kind of range, your athleticism bar gets lower because you have that much more space to work with because they have to close out on you. And he has shown, much like Steph Curry did, and Curry developed this over Davidson. I remember watching Curry in college, and people talked about him, and of course, there's many questions about whether he would be an NBA. You know, I said, well, everyone knows about his shooting, but I think he's actually a better passer than a shooter. And I would say the same thing about Trae Young. He's a highly gifted passer. Now, he's got into some bad habits the last few weeks where he's just taken on too much. And, you know, it's certainly understandable. I mean, they had one game where he took 39 shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just unacceptable. And what's amazing is in this last game against Kansas, he goes from scoring, 42 points on 39 shots. And then and everyone sort of comes down on him the way that, and say, hey, you got to play through your guy. You know, you got some good teammates. They're a Final Four caliber team, mm-hmm. but they have to be more of a team. At Kansas, he scores 28 points on 9 shots. So he made that adjustment mm-hmm. from one game to the next. This guy is a prodigy. And you know what he did after the game? He's been interviewed with Holly Rowe, and she said, oh, you played different. And he said, well, it's kind of how I've been playing, but I got away from that the last couple of games, and I want to apologize to everybody.
I saw that.
He doesn't want to apologize to everybody. So all you scouts out there with your magnifying glasses and you're looking for warts and you're dissecting the warts and does this wart have a wart? I mean, watch the freaking kid play. And he's a basketball genius, and he is tailor-made for this NBA, and he will be not a good player. He will be a star in the NBA.
Is the Steph comparison lazy? Is it?
No, it's perfect.
That's it? You think that's kind of...
I mean, aside from maybe him being an inch smaller... Mm.
He's about 6'2". I mean, yeah.
He's pretty... When people see Steph, they're like, wow, he's a lot bigger than I thought,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think the Steph... I mean, you look at him, he's got maybe... I've seen people say, like, Jimmer.
Mm. Well, that would be the other side of things.
That would not be a great cut, but Jimmer was not this kind of a passer. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jimmer was one of the best college scorers I've ever seen, but he didn't make plays for his teammates the way this kid
does. Jimmer couldn't defend, though. I mean, just...
Couldn't defend. This kid can, if he's committed to it.
Yeah.
And by the way, if he's not, like, the best defender, like, it's okay.
As long as you're average.
Exactly.
Steph's not a great defender either, but he's just good enough that...
If he had to be a great, you know, a better defender, I'm sure Steph could be, but, you know, wow, you know, so, no, Trae Young will be just, I mean, I'm not saying maybe take him one. There's some other guys in this draft. We haven't even talked, I'm sure you want to talk about Marvin Bagley,
yes.
But Trae Young is very, and again, when you see the adjustment that he made from one game to the next, mm-hmm. and they beat Kansas, which is not easy to do, he is a special, special kid.
You mentioned Bagley. Took a deep dive on Bagley when my Boston College Eagles thumped your Duke Blue Devils.
They're not mine when they lose.
By the way, thank God I wasn't there, because I would have been one of those assholes charging the court. I would have been like on ESPN, like in front of the camera going like, yeah!
You're a face painter.
Like, hey, there's Chris Mannix doing that great.
No.
But the kid clearly has a diverse NBA skill set. I mean, he's, you know, projected probably as a 4-man, I would think, in the league. Maybe he can play 5 because, you know, I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns
maybe
is playing
can play
5.
3.
Yeah, maybe he can do that, I guess.
Positionless.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, he's obviously a different type of player than an Ayton or you know, even Jaren Jackson. But how do you see Bagley's skill set fitting
well,
in?
Well, and he's a lefty, you know, and that I love that at his position. You know, it's interesting. I guess I have to look this up again, but when he played on the Nike EYBL circuit for his AAU team, I think their record was like 2-13.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. And I saw him. I did a story on him for Sports Illustrated, I think 2 years ago from the Peach Jam. And, you know, he had some things where he moved high schools in a way that I think, frankly, was not good for him. And he lost a year because they wouldn't let him play in California. But and I watched him play, and I was almost like, I don't get it. Like, everyone's saying this guy's the best thing ever, like, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I see he's big. I see, you know, once in a while he would show you something, but mostly he was like loafing. Now, some of that is just kind of that West Coast cool where maybe they're playing hard and not showing that, because when you watch him at Duke with his body language, his poise and his comportment and his demeanor on the court are off the charts A+. But he's playing really, really hard, and he's in great physical shape. You know, for a guy at his age with his build to be able to play the kind of minutes that he does and to play power minutes under the rim, getting fouled, rebounding, that's a lot harder than playing out on the perimeter.
Mm.
So he's shown a great skill set. Now, you know, he's not a laser from 3-point range, but he's made enough that you got to respect him. And he certainly has a terrific skill set, but what he really is, which I did not realize, is he's a very impressive and effective post player.
Mm.
And this is why I think Duke is going to be harder to beat in the tournament than they've been in the past, because there's not a great 3-point shooting team, Duke. So a lot of times they'd have these off 3-point shooting nights in the tournament and have no plan B. You can always throw the ball to Marvin Bagley in the post. And by the way, their other big man, Wendell Carter, if he's not as good, he's real close. Mm-hmm. He's real close. and he'll probably be top five as well. So they have these two guys down below. But you know what Bagley does is very much going to translate to the next level. He'll be a great finisher in transition if you get him up tempo. But you can throw two in the post. He can wheel and deal. He can take his man outside, and he can also do that. You know, defending the ball screen and recovering and hedging and blocking shots as well. So he's about as can't miss as you get.
I mean, like the guys we've talked about. We've just talked about four or five guys. I mean, do you feel like this is a draft that's deep with, you know, four, five, six guys that
Yeah. It's kind of similar to last year. I think it's a good draft. Mm-hmm. I really do. I mean, I think the top five or six are all guys who could really be, you know, all-star Hall of Fame caliber. Mm-hmm. Now I haven't quite dug in. You know, we have a guy at the Athletic at the Fieldhouse, Sam Vecini, mm-hmm. who does our NBA draft stuff.
He's great.
Yeah, he talks about, you know, once you get to 12, his line is at 12, and after 12, like a big drop. You get to take 13 at, you know, 30 and just basically throw darts, which is probably how it usually is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all the guys we've talked about can really be franchise players. I really believe that.
Okay, so let me ask you one more about the back half, the Rodney Hood types, the juniors and seniors that, you know, we talked about Kyle Kuzma earlier. Do you have somebody in that kind of junior-senior class, like the upperclassmen, that probably won't get the attention that some of the guys we talked about before the draft, somebody that you think will be late first round, maybe even early second round, that you think can make an impact?
Well, if we're going to keep the Duke love going, I think Grayson Allen is going to be an intriguing prospect. You know, Grayson Allen is terrific.
I can't.
He's a tough one.
As an NBA guy, he was smart to go back.
This is why I'm saying he's interesting, because I'm not going to tell you he's a can't miss. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'll tell you: he's 6'5", and he is a great athlete. People compare him to Rex Chapman because we have to compare the white guys to the white guys. But Rex compares him to Rex. In fact, Rex loves to tell the story about how before the Final Four started, when Grayson was a freshman, he was talking to Krzyzewski because Kentucky was also there, and Krzyzewski pointed at Grayson and said, "He reminds me of you." Mm. So he is an NBA-level athlete. He's an NBA-level shooter. He is a really, really good shooter. Mm-hmm. And Krzyzewski,
is he J.J. Redick level kind of shooter?
Who is, really?
I mean, if you're that size, you've got to be able to shoot the ball like that.
Yeah, you know, it's not. He's close now. Mm-hmm. He's got a very pure stroke. The thing about Grayson is obviously he's always run hot, right? And so he's always been a super aggressive. You know, when he was a kid, he used to have trash cans in the driveway and jump off the trash cans to dunk. Mm-hmm. And so that's how he kind of played. And Krzyzewski's like, hey, let's not, because he's getting hurt, his body's getting worn down. He was injured all of last year. So Krzyzewski's like, look, you're a great shooter. Be a great shooter. And I think it's taken away kind of his aggressiveness. And I could see him being a rotation guy, maybe not a starter. I could see him being a rotation guy because of his great shooting ability. You just kind of swing it around to him, get him room and rhythm, bang, he can knock it down. Mm-hmm. But then he can also take you off the dribble and finish. He can defend. He's going to be kind of intriguing. A couple other guys come to mind as you were talking. One of them is Mikal Bridges, who plays for Villanova. Now, it's interesting to me, we talk about the Lakers. I mean, I think Josh Hart has acquitted himself pretty well, right? I mean, he's getting minutes.
He's going to be, I think, a serviceable kind of backup, you know, that sort of player.
He'll be in the league for 12 years because he's positionless. Mm-hmm. He can do a lot of different things. He's a winner. He knows how to win. It's always interesting to me. I know that we have the occasional Jimmers and, you know, maybe like an Adam Morrison to me is probably still the biggest surprising bust to me. But like, Josh Hart was National Player of the Year, mm-hmm. basically, in college. So the idea that he can't play in the NBA is just silly to me. Mm-hmm. And so Mikal Bridges to me is actually a little bit more of a fit for the NBA because he's a long athletic wing, and year by year he's added to his skill set, whereas now he's a knockdown 3-point shooter. So I think he's being projected in the lottery. And another guy to me I think is pretty interesting is Alonzo Trier at Arizona. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that has been a little bit of a tension just in terms of the way that they play, where you have not only at Arizona DeAndre Ayton, but another 7-footer, a guy Dusan Ristić, who might be able to be a pro, I think, highly skilled. 2 7-footers. Very few NBA teams are doing that much. But and Shawn Miller probably would prefer not to play like that, but those are his best guys. And it's clogging things up for Trier. Mm-hmm. And he's a good athlete, but he's had some big-time scoring games. And again, I think in some ways, even though obviously it's hard to make the NBA and the players are better, in some ways for guys like Grayson Allen and Alonzo Trier, it's easier to play in the NBA because you're playing off guys and there's more possessions and it's more of a free-flowing game. And with his build and his athleticism and shooting ability, I think Alonzo Trier is going to find his way on a roster and be able to stick.
Okay, let me finish with this. You mentioned Brad Stevens, part of your book. Here's the third plug coming for you. Getting to us, March 6th, pick it up.
I was just thinking, it's been a while since we played.
I know. I mean, you can't go more than 15 minutes without doing that.
I'm sorry.
everyone is kind of now looking for the next Brad Stevens. And you mentioned the demeanor, and that's a big part of what NBA teams are looking for. And you're seeing a lot of early coaching openings. I mean, Milwaukee just opened up, Phoenix, a handful of probably six, seven coaching jobs may be available next year. And the execs I talked to are all scouring the college market. They're not looking for Calipari anymore. They're not looking for Patino. They're looking for the next 35-year-old Brad Stevens type. Is there someone that jumps to your mind that is like, okay, give me the next Brad Stevens, if possible.
I don't know. I think NBA teams might hesitate on him because of their style. Tony Bennett of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
He loses guys every year. How's Malcolm Brogdon doing in the NBA, right?
Yeah, excellent.
And he was, what, a second-round pick? Or, mm-hmm. So Tony Bennett every year has a great team. He loses players. He's not recruiting anyone's All-Americans. But it is predicated on defense and a very boring style of play. He's highly intelligent. He's a man of the highest character. I think he would adapt to the NBA. I think NBA players would respect him because of his intellect and his approach to the game. I think he would be smart enough to hire assistants who are more offensive minded and would help teach him and help him adjust. His ability to learn, his ability to manage a game. He's the guy that comes to mind for me. You know, outside of that, I don't know. I mean, you know, he's not young, obviously, but you know what I mean? Lon Kruger is a guy who's won everywhere that he's been, except with the Hawks, but nobody would have won with the Hawks.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why, you know, Brad's,
tough if you fail to go back to that well, for NBA teams to go back to that
it
well.
It is, but I mean, if you look at the way that he coaches, and again, he's probably past the time where he's even interested anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got a great situation, and you know, but everywhere he's been, he's won.
Mm-hmm.
And he's winning again at Oklahoma. Went to the Final Four with Buddy Hield. So you know he's a guy to me. But I don't know. I mean, if you want to throw out some names to me, but I don't know any other guys who I would consider young up and comers. You know, Mike White at Florida is kind of interesting, but you know I don't think he's done enough yet. But at least in terms of what he's doing in college, I'll say Tony Bennett is the new Brad Stevens because I think that highly of him.
Mm-hmm. Seth, thanks for coming in, man.
It's great.
Always great to catch up.
What's the name of the book again?
Let's see. I think it's Getting to Us, out March 6th. You should
Penguin
be like a
Press,
game show
yes.
host there, man.
That's the one that's thing next. We haven't that's, done. That's, yeah, that's, I've that's, tried. I've tried.
Well, thanks for coming in, man.
Thank
I appreciate
you, Chris.
It.
Great to see you, pal.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Seth Davis and Brian Scalabrine for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.